I love you back.
I'm wish in the well. Don't ask me, I'll never tell. I look to you as this fell, and now you're in my way. I prayed my soul for a wish, pennies and dimes for a kiss. I wasn't looking for this, but now you're in my way. Your stare was holding grip, Gina's skin was showing. Hot night wind was blowing. Where do you think you're going, baby? Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. But here's my number, so call me, maybe. It's hard to look right at you, baby. But here's my number, so call me, maybe. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. But here's my number, so call me, maybe. And all the other boys try to chase me. But here's my number, so call me, maybe. Subscribe, and I love you back. Maybe.
Jackson, you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show, because that's how I can remember it, by my name, or else I wouldn't even know where I am. I want to introduce my people. I don't call them my people. I set my people free. Set my people free.
Where's the Messiah now? We're free at last.
Free at last. Go, white people. Be free. I want to introduce Suzanne Breinbach. Suzanne Breinbach has been on his show. She's a financial advisor. She's also does a lot of work with indie films, helps them get financed. She's into a lot of distribution and investments. You guys will make very good contacts if you be very, very friendly with Suzanne. Suzanne, welcome to the show. How are you, sweetheart?
I am just great because I love your show, and I love you, and I love all your listeners. So I'm here again.
I love you, baby.
Archives.
Stay tuned for archives. Could be the hidden tapes that you want to see. I want to introduce Diane. Diane Breinbach. I'm sorry, Diane Mears Dillon. She is such a great friend of mine. I love her to death. She is our board producer. You will be talking to her first before you get to me. So be nice, kiss her ass. She loves it, and She will not put, if you are a bill collector, no, you know who you are, sir. You cannot be on the show. I will not pay you.
Neither will I.
Neither will I. That's why I have Diane there. Thank you, Diane. Welcome to the show. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, Lady Di.
Oh, look at that. Well, I just saw the debate yesterday. And let me tell you something. I'm an unbiased person. But all I can say is I haven't seen a whooping like that since me and my friend Johnny got in trouble and his father took the belt to him. What a whooping.
I thought I was watching Saturday Night Live.
Oh, you did? You didn't see the debate? I mean,
I thought it was Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, Barack just kicked his... You know, I know when Barack is going to do good. You know how I can tell when Barack's going to do... If you look at the debate again, if you go on YouTube, I don't have it, blah, blah. When he gets off that chair and he does that swagger, he leans to the side, his head to the side, you know something's going to happen.
He's just got to get rid of being pigeon-toed. You know, straighten the feet out.
I know, but when he starts leaning to the side, he does his gangster walk move, and he goes...
That swagger, yeah.
Yeah, and then he has a lot to say because he can't get it out because it always starts with,
Well, he wasn't missing the teleprompter.
Exactly. Exactly. Let me be clear. And it was a couple of And it's funny, you should see in the beginning, you should see Mick's face. His eyes lit up as soon as, I mean, Barack Obama didn't waste any time going after him. It was like, and Mick go, whoa. He was ready to call the police. He goes, I haven't seen black people this angry since the last time we walked to the store and it was late at night.
Yeah, he was really getting scared.
Yeah, he was
like,
oh, my
God. 911. It's
exactly.
A black guy coming after me.
Exactly. Security, security. Angry black man here. We don't know what he's going to do.
Thank God he wasn't wearing a hoodie.
Exactly. Oh, my. Ooh, that's. Wow. Diane, did you hear that?
I did.
Okay, I'll be good. I'll be good.
No, that gets you this. That's from the rowdy crowd. We have a big show today. We have Nicholas Garoff. Nicholas was...
Yay.
Yeah, he's a nice... Oh, Kelly just interrupted me. Breaking news. Obama and Ms. Page. Okay, thank you, Kelly. Please do not read this on air. I won't. So, what I'm going to say is that we have Nicholas on here. This man impressed me. I'm not going to say young man because the man's about 26 years old. He impressed me with his union views and his political views and everything. He is not a Democrat. He is not a Republican. He is just a poor schmuck who's an American, and he's pissed off. But he will give us – oh, Diane, Kelly interrupted me again. It must be important. Okay.
Yeah, he's 29, not 26.
Yeah, he interrupted me. Thank you, Kelly. Going back with my – now I sound like Brock. Okay, wait a minute, Kelly just interrupted me. He is a political scientist. Thank you. I'm muting Kelly now. So what he's going to do is talk – he's not a Republican. He's, okay, hold on. He's not a schmuck. Okay, he's not a schmuck. What I'm going to do – is talk to him because he is not, like I said, he's not a Republican, he's not a Democrat, he's not a he may be a libertarian. I'm really going on that, and I think he may be leaning towards Ron Paul. I'm not quite, but he's very intelligent, and he will give us a spin on it. Let's see what else we have, and we have a great filmmaker. This guy, his name is Sean Carlo. He has an interesting film that's coming out, and he wants to talk about it. He also needs funding for the film. This man has written over 20 scripts. He's written horror, crime, capers, grindhouse films. I had him on last week. I want to have him on again. He's seeking funding for his film. I'd like to find out more about the film because I'd like to get behind it. That's what we have for the show today. So I was going to do a couple of things, and if you're a viewer of this show or a listener of the show, I usually have a bit to do. I got no bit. That's
you
it.
Got no bit?
I did. No, nothing. I got nothing. I got nothing.
No, I don't believe it.
No, I got nothing. So what we're going to do is for the first 10 minutes, we're going to do a staring contest on the radio. I'm only kidding. We're going to break for a little commercial and
yes,
until our guest Nicholas gets in here. And what did you think of the debate really quickly, Suzanne? Who won?
Well, like I said, I thought I was watching Saturday Night Live. I thought it was a pretty equal match. I really did. I loved the way they paced. I loved the way they kind of stood off. It was like a wrestling or boxing, I don't know, sports. You know, one of those things where you kind of have to hop back and forth like Ollie. I thought it was great.
They had a lot of political science. They had this woman psychologist on. I was watching today's show, and she was saying women were put off of it because men were were at each other in their faces. They were uncomfortable. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And I'm going to tell you something. It's not natural. When you got two men who are very heated, and they ended up in a master debate, women always get pissed off. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we are that way.
I know. You know what I'm saying. We'll be right back after we hear this political announcement that is completely unbiased.
Mitt Romney style. Romney style. I got a horse in the Olympics, girl, but I don't even watch him. In and out of Jack LaValle, cause I'm so fucking awesome. Bitch, it's Friday night, you know we benefit hopping. Check my guitar. company with so much savoir faire. I bought a mansion for each one of my 24 heirs. Straight up millionaire. Affluent, extravagant, that's myth. Hey, yeah, that's so myth. Mitt Romney style. Romney style. Mitt Romney style. Romney style. Mitt Romney style.
Hey, wealthy lady.
Mitt Romney style.
Hey, wealthy lady.
Mitt.
You didn't have any bit ready at all, did you?
No. Just played a little song. Kelly has a breaking news. I posted this show on Rush Limbaugh's page. Didn't think about the commentators' pages like that, but still post Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, I would love it if Rush called in.
Speaking of Rush, here we go. Without further ado, Mr. Nicholas. I'm going to pronounce it Mr. Nicholas, how are you, sir? Oh, I have to hit the button. There you go. Nicholas, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm hungover. I made a drinking game of it as I intended to, and it came off smashingly.
Welcome back, Nicholas. I'm loved that you're on the show.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure.
That's Suzanne, and then you have Diane, which you probably won't hear. She's on the board unless she pisses somebody off. Nicholas, you know what I'm going to ask you. Let's get right down to it. First, I'm going to ask you who won, and then we'll go into detail. Who you think won the debate?
I got to give this one to Obama. For one thing, just, you know, walking into this one from the last one, which, I mean, his first debate was just his performance was abysmal. It looked like he had the flu. He was busy just doodling, I don't know, something on that page, probably. I heard Roxanne Roberts on Wait, Don't Tell Me say that he was probably just jotting down, man, if this debate is split screen, I'm screwed. But he was active and alive, and he was making the eye contact with the audience members, looking in the camera, just, staring down Romney. He was on point, and he had a really good performance. I'm actually kind of watching it right now on mute just to observe the body language, which is actually kind of funny because looking at it, Romney, it's a really familiar kind of body language because I used to work in sales, and right now that's a definite pitch he's giving about, you know, please believe this bullshit, please, trust me.
Well, you know what? Well, was I wrong, Nicholas, that you're watching it and you're doing the body language? Didn't you see when Obama got off that chair the first time? Didn't you see him have that swagger and the eye of the tiger in his eye?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was clear. I mean, for one thing, it was clear. And actually, something I'm going to give them both real credit on. More credit to Romney's team than Obama's, because Obama has a natural oratory gift. The guy can talk well, actually, Biden talks circles around people, but, you know, Obama can really deliver a good message. And he is, you know, and he is an excellent debater. But having, you know, I come from New England, and I'm familiar with Mitt Romney from his time as governor of Massachusetts. And I've seen him debate before, and I will say that, like, he's got, Romney's team has some really great coaches working with him right now. Because even though,
I agree.
And this might be, you know, this might sound, you know, subjective here. You know, even though Mitt Romney is full of shit, he's gotten very good at, you know, at hammering at the points he wants to make. One thing I noticed too, I was watching it on CNN, and that live time poll tracker they had, which I got to say I was really good at predicting, but. While he was going through that, it was interesting because his campaign's pretty much been centered around strictly just attacking the Obama administration, which, you know, if you're going after an incumbent, is something you do to one extent or another. He's been kind of heavy with it, and I noticed, you know, when he was hammering on his own points, when he was trying to sell his message, it was reflected in the polls that was actually rather well received. It didn't seem to me from that lifetime poll and also just from listening to them talk that he was doing as good a job at hammering home the points, but he did much better with people, and I honestly enjoyed listening to him more, when he was talking about his policies or his proposals, which is something he's not asked to do too often. And when he would go on the attack, actually when both of them would go on a direct attack, the mood kind of soured, I noticed, which is something I kind of, like, I wasn't really surprised by it, but it was interesting to see because, you know, everyone loved hearing about what these guys were actually going to say they're going to do, and the popular notion of attack politics being unpopular was really kind of proven there, despite the fact that, you know, CNN is pretty terrible with data.
Mm. Well, you know, everybody has their spin. If you're watching CNN, you know they're kind of liberal. If you're watching, God forbid, MSNBC.
Well, I just want to stop you there. I mean, I wouldn't even go as far as calling CNN liberal. I'll say MSNBC is liberal, and I'll say Fox is definitely conservative. I like to regard CNN as inept, but go on.
Oh, God.
That's exactly how I feel.
Well,
I'm just surprised they didn't get, like, I'm just surprised, like, you know, they didn't somehow cut off halfway through the debate because one of their giant iPads malfunctioned.
I know, and do you really get that green line at the bottom? Well, who cared about that green line? They didn't even explain it.
I can explain what that is right now, actually. This is something you...
Please
that,
do.
Actually, well, usually, a lot of times, campaigns will actually have this being done privately. You want, like, CNN did that tracker. CNN did that tracker for viewer benefit. But what usually happens during, well, actually what always happens during most any debate is both campaigns' teams will actually assemble pools of undecided voters, which is what CNN did. And when you see those lines, there's the yellow and the green, and the yellow is the women and the green is the men. What it is the panel, there's a panel of people, undecided voters, sitting and watching this debate with, generally they're like, sort of like volume knobs that go either way. And
okay.
When they agree, or they're favorable, they turn one way, and when they disagree or unfavorable, they turn another, which is why you saw it kind of go up and down, and, like, you know, when they go on the attack, you'd see it start dipping. When they discuss their policies, you'd see it go up. And whenever they'd, stop and it was, you know, the other guy's turn, you see it go back to neutral. So what that is that's actually sort of a lifetime opinion gauge.
Yeah, and I agree with that. It's just I thought they should have explained that to us. I had no idea what they were doing. And I'm an educated woman, and I've seen those type of things on other types of shows, but I didn't think CNN made that clear. I didn't know what the green stood for, and I didn't know what the yellow stood for.
I'm shocked by that. CNN did.
Maybe I tuned in late, but
Well, CNN,
my God, not explaining themselves? Oh, my God.
That's true.
I'm surprised.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you something from Hannity. Tell me if you guys agree with this. Now, Hannity, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right.
Sean Hannity?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is his spin on the debate last night. tell me if I'm right, or I'd like to hear what you guys have to say.
Where the second presidential debate concluded just a short time ago. And by the way, a CBS instant poll came out on the economy. It shows Romney won tonight 65-35. And for more instant analysis of tonight's face-off, we head back.
Now, that was his take. You heard what he said.
I had a hangover when I called in, but now I've got a splitting headache.
I mean, that's a large. That was a large margin. He said he won by. I mean, I would buy if it was close. If he would have said it was close, I would have bought into it. But saying that.
Tonight from Hofstra University, where the second presidential debate concluded just a short time ago. And by the way, a CBS instant poll came out on the economy. It shows Romney won tonight 65-35.
65-35.
Oh, my God.
That's a huge margin.
No way.
That's, you know, the one word that really jumped out in that was instant poll.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, for one thing, you know, you don't get any context in terms of how that, you know, poll is actually, you know, taken. One thing I always like to remind people about when it comes to polls, though, you both, I'm sure, get political calls. I mean, I've run the, you know, the call centers that send the poll calls and the campaign calls.
Right.
And everyone gets them, and everyone hates them. Now, let me ask, do you take those polls? Do you take those calls, or do you hang up if they don't call me?
And they always call during dinner time. I don't know what it is. I get those calls during dinner time.
It's that the pollsters and the call centers and the call center managers, they call then because they know you're home. And also because, well, I mean, at least in my mind, typically dinner time is something that, you know, it used to be a thing people sat down and ate together. Now it's just like, I eat sometime in the evening. But, one of the things is, though, is just like you said, you don't take those calls. You'll hang up, you'll not answer. Some people I know from experience will pick up and read you the riot act and throw every curse in the book at you. One of the things I always find like really suspicious about, especially instant polls and these rapid polls that come out, is who's going to respond. Because the people who take political calls, the people who take poll calls, the people who give their opinions, generally people who are pretty passionate about their opinions, which means they're pretty much rooted in one camp or the other. So
yeah, they want to push their agenda. Where someone like me, I could care less. I'm not taking the call.
Yeah. So, I mean, and in terms of, like, Romney winning on the economy, you know, maybe I can give him some credit because one thing that corporatists, market happy conservatives are really good at is basically boiling their entire ideology down to simple bullshit lines that they can deliver. To really explain the economy to anybody, to really like actually explain, and I'm an educated, you know, politico, and I hate economics. It's just a headache for me. But you know, to really explain how things like stimulus plans can help, you know, kickstart the economy, it takes a lot of time. It's more than like, you know, a 5-minute or like 2-minute turn in a debate, or even like several 2-minute turns to really explain how it is that, like, you know, market economics and, you know, like government actions work together. So like Romney can go out there and say, I was a businessman. Over and over again and say, I know how the economy works. And, you know, it's not hard to buy at that point because if you don't know any better, you'd be like, oh, well, he was a businessman. Clearly he knows about the economy. And it's the same thing like when he mentioned, you know, Obama tried to hit him for investing in China and then he tried to hit him back. And one thing I found interesting about that, I inherited a small IRA from my grandmother when she passed last year. And part of that IRA, and this was like, you know, and it wasn't her choice when it was put together. You know, she made like the basic options they do when you're trading and such. But the thing is that like, you know, if you have any kind of investment in emerging markets, you're investing in China. And just about anyone with any kind of steady IRA right now has that. Difference being, though, between, and I can't say, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe the Obamas, you know, actively invested in China for a return. I can't say, but Romney did more than invest in China. Romney actually worked closely with Chinese business leaders to basically help businesses like Foxconn and these sweatshops, for lack of a better term, you know, actively not only grow, but he also was instrumental in helping them take the manufacturing that we pretend we really like here and send it over there so that everyone can get cheap shit. So there's a difference between investing and really being instrumental.
I thought that was one good point that Barack made, too, when he looked right at Romney and says, you're the last person that we should talk about China. And I thought that was a really good point that he made. And, again, Romney looks like he got caught in the headlights. He didn't people are saying be presidential. I mean, he just got caught in the headlights. He got into it in the middle. He challenged him in the middle. He didn't back down. But his eyes were just big in the beginning. It was like, what's going to hit me? What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to let you listen to our friend, Rush Limbaugh. And I like to hear your commentary on that. Just here we go.
From any kind of opposition his whole life, he's been protected. If he got a C at Harvard, somebody gave him an A. If he needed to get into Harvard Law, somebody greased the skids. He's had the way paved for him. And he's protected, and he's shielded, and he has a teleprompter, and his words are written for him. And his surroundings are carefully crafted. His appearances are assembled. There are no people of substantive opposition permitted. As such, Barack Obama has never faced opposition. He's always been able to reject it. He's always been able to poo-poo it and have media people take care of the mess for him. He's never had to deal with it.
Let me just comment first, and I'll let you comment on this, Nicholas. And I can only comment on it just as an outsider. First of all, Barack did not have it easy. He is a product of an interracial marriage, which, and judging by his age, was not easy. He was brought up, raised, and born in Hawaii. He came, and you can back me up on this, he came to Chicago, and basically he knocked on doors. Basically he was, what would you call him at that time, Nicholas?
Community organizer.
Community organized. Thank you very much. And you know about that. How hard of a job is being a community organizer? Just knocking on people's door, getting them aware of issues, and getting them out to vote, or just explaining the issues. And you don't know who's behind that door.
I'm sorry. I was I got to format my answer because I was trying to get my gun working after listening to Rush, because my brain matter would look better on the wall right now. Well, Brian, I mean, honestly, I mean, you know how easy it is, you know, and I mean, it's a cakewalk, especially back in like the 60s, to be a black man in this country. So,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he's been protected the whole time and never faced opposition. And I mean, Congress just laid down for the last couple of years and just said, hey, you know what, Barack, do your thing, man. We're happy to have you. Yeah, I mean,
of course.
No, I mean, why are we giving, see, this is the thing that kills me, you know, there's a classic liberal, you know, and I mean classically liberal idea that every voice deserves to be heard and every opinion is valid. Why the hell are we giving Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh credit? I mean, these guys are idiots, and I mean, don't just mean that because they're partisan. I have plenty of Republican friends who are much smarter than both of those jagoffs. That comment alone was probably one of the most asinine things I've heard in months. Barack Obama had it easy. You know, as a community organizer, I did it in D.C. And the thing is like, there are very few places in the country that I would say are more dangerous and harder to work in than D.C. as a community organizer. I mean, I got caught in a gunfight when I was in Anacostia. And, yeah, it's door-to-door. And usually most community organizations, since they're privately funded and they're really small, like, you don't know who's behind that door. You're going out with a blank sheet of paper, or you're going out with, like, a contact list that's 5 or 10 years out of date sometimes, and knocking on doors and trying to explain first that you have to update your records and you're sorry that Mrs. Wilkinson died 5 years ago and that it's now the Rogers household. But
Yeah, and in Chicago, I wouldn't work in Chicago for really any amount of money, politically or community organizing. Community organizing, you're likely to get shot if you're in the South Side. And politically, goddamn, I mean, the horse trading, is, you know, that's the name of the game there. It's corrupt. It's the most corrupt place on earth.
Yes.
And a lot of people like to say, oh, he's a Chicago politician. Truth is, I mean, he's, you know, Obama's traded horses. He's played the corporate game. He's taken the corporate money. He's, you know, he failed to prosecute anyone on Wall Street for all their dirty deeds. But, I mean, I'll say this, as far as Chicago politicians go, the guy's kind of squeaky clean comparatively.
Yeah.
Comparatively to Chicago, anybody's squeaky clean.
Yeah,
yeah,
I was.
Exactly. And the fact that you come up in Chicago
was squeaky
politically,
clean.
Yeah, you don't, I mean, you don't come up, you don't come up in Illinois politics. You can't be insulated. I mean, if you want to come up in an insulated environment, you go to, like, Mississippi and say that, like, the earth is 6,000 years old and all of a sudden...
Exactly.
You know,
move. Exactly. Move. You've got to be playing in the game if you're going to be in Chicago.
Yeah. So, I mean, that Rush clip is one of the most asinine things I've heard. And
that was really stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I got another one, and it's not just a Rush. Let's listen to Chris Matthews, and you know Chris Matthews, Nicholas.
God. Oh, God.
Okay, let's hear what he says. I'd like to take your take on this. This is him talking about the last debate, not this debate here, but the debate before.
The first debate.
The first debate, yes, thank you.
Okay.
Here it is.
All the key fighting points of this campaign. And certainly there was no Bobby Kennedy in the green room before Barack Obama came out tonight. I don't know what he was doing out there. He had his head down. He was enduring the debate rather than fighting it. Romney, on the other hand, came in with a campaign. He had a plan. He was going to dominate the time. He was going to be aggressive. He's going to push the moderator around, which he did effectively. He was going to relish the evening, enjoying it. Nothing to do with the words he spoke. Here's my question for Obama. I know he likes to say he doesn't watch cable television, but maybe he should start. Maybe he should start. I don't know how he let Romney get away with the crap he threw out tonight about Social Security. Listen to the stuff he got away with. He said, you know, emergency room. The latest thing we got from Romney, because he said so, is, you know what I want to do with people when they're poor? Shove them in the emergency room. Why didn't Obama say that? Why didn't he say that? You talk about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicare people. They're part of your 47%. You want to drop them from the list of eligible Americans. You don't have any care for these people. What are you talking about? We've got it on tape, Governor. We've got it on tape what you think of these people. Don't come out here and pretend you care about old people because you met somebody at some campaign.
Now, when you piss off Chris Matthews, you
guys are hard. That's not hard.
Wait, before we go into that one, I just have to add, from the first debate, I loved the best excuse that ever was come up with for Barack's behavior, and that was Al Gore saying, because of climate change, and he was in Denver, his brain was off.
I thought
about
it had more to do with the fact that it was his anniversary, and he had, like, you know.
Oh, I forgot about,
like,
that,
oh,
too.
Shit,
yeah,
I've been married for this long. Oh my God! No wonder my hair is white. No, I've actually met Chris Matthews, and the funny thing about him too is, like, he'll have you know, and I met him back during, like, the 08 primary, just real quick, but he'll have a normal tone. He'll talk like a normal person about anything, but the moment you get him started on anything political, he just goes up
you can't set him up. He's just a rant. Yeah.
He's an excitable guy. The last debate, like I said, it was abysmal. Yeah, his head was down. He looked like he had the flu or something. This one, I mean, it's on the TV right now. It's on mute. And even when he's sitting there, I mean, with the exception of, like, the smiles, you know, the smirky smiles he throws out whenever, like, you know, Romney says something.
Well, that was climate change because it was Denver.
Yeah.
Because of the height.
He just couldn't take it. Yeah, the elevation, I'm sure. I don't know. I've been to Hofstra, too, and honestly, like, that place sucks the life out of me, so... But I mean, you know, he was definitely a lot more alive. He was definitely, like, a lot more on point. Barack Obama that people voted for, well, almost the Barack Obama people voted for in 08. He was sharp. And there was one bit last night when he was, you know, when Romney's trying to politicize the Libya and the Benghazi attacks,
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I'm sitting there watching it with my roommate, and we're both half drunk at the time, but it even struck us enough to the point where we had to rewind it because of the way he's like, I'm the one who greets those caskets. I'm like, damn, that is, that's a powerful message.
Yeah,
who wouldn't grieve in front of a casket? Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, Mitt had a point, too. Okay, that's, everybody's going to listen. All right, they're bashing us. Let's be fair. Mitt had a point. He said it took, when that happened, what the embassy was going, they were attacking our embassy, Obama said that, within 5 hours I was on the air and I was explaining everything and we were attacked. And Mitt said, no, it took you 2 weeks to come on the air to explain what was going on.
Well, that's kind of explainable.
Go ahead, Nick. Candy Crowley, the moderator, jumped in and even actually did point out that, the issue with that was you've got this dumbass, terrible, terrible movie. And when I say terrible, not just because of how offensive it was. It was offensive as a film enthusiast myself. And that came out at the same time. All of a sudden, the Libyan... Libyan embassies, our embassy in Libya is attacked. To draw the line between the two of them, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist. The problem being, though, is that, further intelligence investigations then prove that it was unrelated. So,
correct.
Barack Obama is not, he's not out there in, he's not going to Libya every day and keeping tabs on things himself. The intelligence community is. And for all the shit they get, and it's, and these are dirty-ass agencies, and half the problems they're dealing with today are because of the games they played back in the 50s and such, Operation Ajax and that kind of thing. But the truth is, they had to go and investigate, a crime. If you have, when you have a murder in any town and police show up, it's pretty common, unless it's, a lock-solid case right off the bat and you got a confession, that they come up with theories. And the most likely theory becomes the one they run with until they find evidence to the contrary. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a criminal act. This is a problem that I think is a problem that's been haunting the U.S. government and the United States and mentality in general since 9/11. And the problem is that, we regard terrorist activity as some kind of, as some kind of special brand of military engagement meets supreme evil. But no one really ever regards it for what it really is, which is a criminal action.
Exactly.
Terrorism, when people blow each other, when people blow other people up, when people shoot other people, regardless of their motivations, and we call it terrorism, the truth of the matter is it's a crime that's occurred. And in order to get to the bottom of it, you have to investigate it like a crime rather than just saying, we will get them, and then bombing the shit out of anybody who looks like whoever may have done it. And so, in terms of Romney trying to politicize that thing, saying, it took you 2 weeks to call it a terrorist attack, he actually mentioned it as a terrorist attack when it happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then when the intelligence communities came up with the evidence to show that it was an unrelated attack, not related to the video, he went and corrected it. The fact that, the politician actually correcting themselves is, that's not too common.
Yeah, but he did go on the UN in his UN speech, and he stressed over and over and over again the video, and that rubbed me the wrong way. I think you should call it for what it is. It was a terrorist attack.
I just didn't like
him standing up on behalf of our country and saying it was all the video.
I just didn't
like it at the UN. That's my opinion.
Well, no, it's a valid opinion. One thing I keep getting twisted up about, and I'm always hearing people say it, it's like, we shouldn't apologize for anything. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. Granted, yeah, we're fighting enemies, overseas who, and there are really dirty, bearded men sitting in caves somewhere who genuinely would cut all of our throats if they had the opportunity and they'd think it was a holy thing to do. But, the truth is that, we drone strike the shit out of the planet. Around the world, we don't even send real bombers in. We send robots to kill people.
Yeah.
And they really end up killing people indiscriminately. I mean, this is one of the biggest criticisms of Obama that I really actually do back up. It's because, you know, when he got elected, I was genuinely hoping. I'm ex-military. And I was hoping it would be a drawdown. Instead of a real drawdown, we get a drawdown, you know, we get less troops, and we have less troops in harm's way. But the thing is, we're still flying into other countries, bombing the shit out of them, and people die. And you know what? If we're trying to kill one terrorist and we kill 5 or 10 civilians in the process,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that is something you should apologize for.
But
that's
isn't, that,
well,
isn't that just, what do they call it, Nicholas? I want to say casualty of war, but
collateral,
what do they call it?
Collateral
damage. Collateral damage.
Collateral damage. Isn't that just collateral
yeah.
damage? As long as
it's
we get the real person. Okay, what about, you know, 14, 15 people? Ah! You know,
collateral damage.
As long as we get bin Laden, kill a couple of wives that are there, what do you think? Is that the mentality we have?
Well, the mentality we have is, I mean, it, you know, it comes back to this isolated sort of American exceptionalism. People believe, you know, and we're wrong. That's essentially what we are. You know, we believe American citizens are more entitled to rights and life than anyone else on the planet simply because we're American citizens.
I agree.
I mean, that's a nice patriotic thing to say, but I mean, just like in the old world, you know,
tough.
A citizen of Rome, a proper citizen of Rome could go anywhere in the world and say, I am a Roman citizen, and if any harm befell them, the weight of Rome would come down. Now, that was an effectively a primitive culture. And the fact that we're sort of mirroring and mimicking it now, I mean, and it's evident everywhere. Not just in the way we kill foreigners in the name of protecting ourselves and such, and not in the way that we invade foreign countries, like sovereign countries that had nothing to do with the attacks we suffered, like Iraq. But, I mean, you take it on immigration, it's the same thing. You know, I know personally, and I'm going to get tons of shit for this. I know I've worked with a lot of illegal immigrants, especially when I was working back in restaurants back in my youth. And we're talking about Brazilians, South Americans, and people who come from dirt, poor, nothing. And they get it in their head and they get the motivation to really take what is one of the most dangerous trips you can take. My friend from Sao Paulo, Brazil, where getting shot is about as easy as getting the mail. This guy
right.
basically walked and hitchhiked from Sao Paulo all the way up to the border of Texas. Now, something people don't understand when they're talking about we need to enforce our borders. The southern Mexican border is an entrepreneurial affair. If you can't pay your way across, and even if you can sometimes, odds are good if you're South American, you're going to catch a bullet in the head. Because
yep.
that's the way it works down there. But these people, they risk everything, just to come here so they can wash dishes or paint houses or, you know, people say, oh, those are jobs Americans don't want. Whether they want them or not, these people come and risk their lives just to be in America. Meanwhile,
I know it. It brings tears
to
my eyes just thinking about the passion that these people have to get here.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
They really demonstrate that they have a genuine desire and love to live in the United States. Meanwhile, you know, every pig-headed Honey Boo Boo fan out there thinks that simply because they fell out of their mother over U.S. soil, they're entitled more than anyone else to all the benefits this country reaps.
Nicholas, I don't mind you attacking Mitt Romney or Obama, but Honey Boo Boo is, you know,
no,
she's
fair
she's
game.
A,
she's
a
fair
United
game.
States treasure. You need
well,
to recognize.
Back,
no,
yeah,
she's
well,
not my
bring,
treasure.
Well, to bring, yeah, well, to bring this back, you know, to bring this back to
right,
Romney, his attack on PBS, for instance. Now, are you familiar with how, like, the progression of the Learning Channel to TLC?
Sure.
Yeah, because the thing was started in the 70s by the government. NASA, the Department of Education, Department of Welfare, Health and Human Services, they all got together to make this informative, basically documentary-style television show. And then it was subsequently privatized under thinking like Mitt Romney is saying that the private sector does it better. If someone's making money on it, then it's clearly working. And now we have, instead of nature documentaries and educational programs, fucking Honey Boo Boo.
Well, you know what? Kelly just broke in with breaking news. Kelly said, Honey Boo Boo she's fair game because she made her pick for president on Kimmel. So go after her, Nicholas. Go after that boo-boo.
Oh, well,
I'll go after that boo-boo.
She's fair game now.
Yeah, I'll leave it. I'll defer to the boo-boo experts.
But
I'm not an expert. I've never watched the show, and I'm never going to watch the show. And I just, it just makes my skin crawl.
But, you know, let me just tell you, here's my view. And Nicholas, you put yourself out there. I'm going to put myself out there. I think 95% of American people are lazy. I think you're right. I think we're entitled. I think we have that mentality. We're entitled to this. If we have to go out of our way to get something, we get pissed off. I agree with that. That's the mentality we have, and I think that's the mentality that people in Europe and all around the world sees us doing. When we go to Academy Awards and these women are wearing $5 million diamonds on their neck and the gowns cost $10,000, and where are they going to a movie?
Exactly. I mean, who really cares? That money would be much better feeding people that can't eat.
Exactly. And I agree with you, Nick.
You just hit it, too. I mean, it's a funny thing. Like, I read a quote, and I'm going to paraphrase, but it's from John Stewart. But, you know, I mean, in this country, and I think it's largely because, you know, people like Mitt Romney. And I'm not going to say Reagan, because Reagan himself was not the Reagan people know. Like, that was advisors, which is probably much like Obama. You know, the people who get elected to office seldom, if ever, really get to carry their agenda all the way because they've got all these interests. But the fact is we're so wealth-obsessed. We're so lifestyle-obsessed. The American dream is no longer about owning a home and raising a family. It's about being rich and famous and just being, you know, being a celebrity. And we're so obsessed with that.
Hoping Kim Kardashian says hi to you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this thing, and it's gotten to such a point where people are famous and rich just for being obnoxious, terrible people. And it's this cultural decline. It's gotten to such a point, though, where you can have a major presidential candidate who outright, you know, he'll defend the blank checks that equate defense spending. He'll defend tax cuts for the richest people. But he'll not only do it himself, but he'll convince other people that the poor bastards taking food stamps and public assistance are lazy and entitled. This was something I wished he'd gone further with it. Obama actually brought up the whole 47% comment, and I really thought he should have hammered harder on that. Because the thing is, class division and class warfare, you know, people like to pretend it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's an abstract concept or it's, you know, artifice. It's real. It's very real. You know, wealth is, like I was saying the other day, wealth is concentrated, and it's been increasingly concentrated, and the game has been rigged so the wealth, you know, rich can get richer and the poor get fucked, and it's been that way forever, but it's gone beyond, you know, the point it used to be where it's just the way it is to it's a point where, like, they've actually spun it that people are buying it.
The gap is huge.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. What is the alternative, Nicholas? I mean, I understand and I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you. But what is the alternative? You want us to go communist? You want us dictatorship? I mean,
here's where the problem stems from, in my opinion, is that people have this all or nothing thinking. You know, it's orthodoxy. And in my opinion, orthodoxy is like it's outright intellectual poison. Because once you start thinking in orthodox terms, you're writing off anything that doesn't exactly conform to the narrative you've adopted. I mean, people are like, oh, well, we can't have social programs because that'll make us into a communist dictatorship. Bullshit. No, it won't. The fact is we still have market dynamics in effect. We still have private enterprise. We still have massive corporations, and a giant consumer society. But the truth is that, like, you know, orthodox capitalism without conscience is no better at the end of the day than, you know, your communist dictatorships. Because people shut their minds off to valid policy proposals that don't necessarily need to be, you know, the absolutes that they think they are. Because it doesn't fit their narrative.
And what you just said, people will point to Canada. What you just said, am I correct? Because what you just said, Canada has socialized medicine.
I didn't reference Canada just now.
Okay, but
I mean, you know,
Canada
and Europe.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, you were talking about all or nothing, and I agree with you. Can't there be some kind of compromise?
A blend. It has to be a blend.
And the first country that I could think of would be Canada. who with the socialized medicine and the people that, but see, we won't go for it. You could point to Canada all you want to, but people are not going to buy cigarettes for $10.50. The taxes in Canada is tremendous. I'm sorry, go ahead.
On the individual and private side, and I mean Europe's very similar. You know, tax rates are high, but at the same time, the savings that are you know enjoyed by the public, just in terms of services are being provided via tax revenue. Services are being provided publicly, which means there's no profit involved. No one's actually taking a piece of the pie. And then at the same time, too, they're not having to pay out of pocket. I mean, if we established a public health care system, a real public health care system, you know, Medicare for all, single payer, whatever you want to call it, in this country, and actually managed it appropriately, got all the bullshit interest groups out and managed it appropriately, yeah, taxes would go up, but individuals, families wouldn't be paying out the nose for private health care they are right now, which
I understand, but corporate America will suffer because of that. Let me just take this one second.
No, they don't have to suffer.
Sharon, I know you want to listen, but do you want to step in on this anytime?
No, I'm not sure where he's going with all of this.
Okay, Sharon, where are you from, please?
New Jersey.
New Jersey. Sharon, would you like to talk to Nicholas?
Sure, I'll listen to him.
No, I'd like to hear your views, too, because especially even New Jersey, what do you think?
About what?
Basically about, let's go with the beginning. Who do you thought won the debate, Obama or Mitt?
I think it really depends how you're looking at it. You know, I mean, like, which way were you looking at the debate? I mean, it's been spun so many ways. I really think perhaps it was a tie.
Okay, and there's another question I want to ask you, Sharon. They have a lot of psychologists on TV right now saying that women, they pulled women, and they said that women were offended of this aggressive debate. They didn't like it. It made them uncomfortable. Did you feel that way?
No, not at all. I was rather impressed by that. You know, it didn't intimidate me. I'm not a fragile female that is scared of something like that. You know,
we are not fragile.
Hello.
Okay, that's good. And Sharon, may I ask you one more thing? Which what party do you belong to? Are you a Democrat or are you Republican?
I don't belong to a party.
You don't?
No.
You know what's interesting, Sharon, and I'm talking to Nicholas too, because Nicholas doesn't belong to a party either, and that's why he's giving his views, and he's just telling it like it is. For the last month, I've been asking people when they call in, and even if it was not a political talk, I would ask them, did you vote? They say no. Do you belong to a party? They say no. I'm very interested. I'm very interested in this. Now, Sharon, at one time, did you belong to a party?
Well, I was born and raised Democrat. Everyone in my township was Democrat, yes.
And now you do not belong to a party. What changed?
First of all, I lived outside the United States for 15 years. So when I came back to the United States, there was a huge change in the United States. It's taken me about 10 years to catch up to what's going on. I don't think I'm really quite there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, about being labeled as a Democrat or a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, does anybody agree 100% with either party? Is there such a thing? You're going to like some things, but you're not going to like everything.
You know, I agree with you, Sharon, but except for one thing. There are certain things that a party will protect. For instance, and I'm going to bring this out, Sharon, and you can talk to me about it, women's rights, or women's right to choose, women's bodies, women's issues.
Right.
I would have to think the Democratic Party tend to protect that.
Right.
And that would sway them to, I agree with you, no one is 100%.
Right.
I like some of Mick's stuff. I like it that he's a businessman.
Right.
I like Obama, because he is a great communicator.
Right.
And but he also, in his heart, I feel that he's trying to make a difference. But the way the country is today, well,
yes,
we need a little bit more Obama. I love you, but, you know, I know Congress is stalling you, and I know this about this. This is your job. Get them together. Work together. But, Sharon.
See, that's it right there, okay? Congress
mm-hmm.
is stalling you. I see him as spending and spending and spending money, you know, and you can't have it all. You can't, you know. We need things here in America now, okay? You need to help the American people. They're losing their houses. They're losing everything. And where's the money going? How can we borrow $3 trillion from China and the economy still look like it does? How does that happen?
Can I jump
in? Nicholas?
Okay. Well, I mean, in terms of, like, you know, we talk about spending. You know, like, now, Health and Human Services does take up a very, very big portion of the federal budget. And a big,
yes,
and a big complaint about that.
Right, and funding to schools got cut. Schools
are getting cut. I mean,
cut,
you know, schools
yeah.
are getting cut across the board. The things that are not getting cut are the things that are protected by the mechanisms which keep. I mean, you know, you say, and it's actually really encouraging because I hear this more and more, saying, I don't have a party allegiance. And the thing
right.
is it is really hard. I mean, if any, you know, there's only two types of people I find who actually identify as partisans, like truly partisans in the sense
right.
we have it. And they're either people who are just ideologically and philosophically and just knee-jerk reactionary opposed to one party, or they're what I call cause heads, which are, you know, they just, half the time, they're people who are like the kind of people who knock on your doors. They just really, really believe, and they don't really bother digging too deep because they know that if they do, then they're going to have their faith shattered. I mean, with the party dynamics, though, I mean, like, there's something, we always hear about defense spending. We always hear about the size of the defense budget. You know, the
right.
defense budget itself, when you hear a total given for a given year, it's an irrelevant number. Because one
right.
like, part of the thing is the way that these corporate, you know, these corporate interests, especially in the defense industry, but it goes across the board with government contracting, is
right.
that, you know, they finance campaigns to, you know, really grease the wheels. Once they get it, and once whoever they fund gets into office, and they generally fund both sides of any given campaign to hedge their bets.
Of course.
Once they get in office, they're approached with this, you know, with this basically a stick and carrot, like basically a threat, saying, you know, play ball with us or we're going to fund your opposition next time and you're not going to get reelected.
Right.
And
well,
that,
do you feel right
they've been able
now?
To,
let
well,
me ask you this. Do
yeah.
you feel right now we need to be cutting back on our defense? Do you think that's wise? I mean, we might want to leave war, but that does not mean war wants to leave us.
The point I was trying to get to, and I do ramble, so I apologize. But,
that's okay.
With defense spending, there's a thing
right.
called, and not a lot of people know this, it's called a cost plus fee award contract.
Okay.
And what that is basically when you have, and this goes from, you know, Blackwater and Z and the mercenary forces like Titan that we use all the way to Halliburton and all the way back to Lockheed Martin and all them developing, like, weapons
right,
to fight
right,
off an imaginary
right,
Soviet
right.
invasion. When they
right.
get these contracts, what they get is they get to basically have all of their overhead covered, every dime. You know, so,
right.
like, if Halliburton or KBR puts an office tower in Bahrain and builds it fresh and buys everyone Escalades, which they do, that's all covered by the government. At the end of the day, what happens is their projected total costs, they basically carve out a percentage of that and call that their fee. So they get a blank check. They get a fee
right.
for what they're doing, and then they get all their
right.
overhead covered. In cutting defense
right.
spending, most defense spending has nothing to do with war. It has to do with
right.
R&D
right.
projects. It has to do with, I mean, like, you know, we all heard about Blackwater from Iraq. The truth is that these mercenary forces, and we call them security forces, but these mercs have actually been, we've been employing them for decades in the drug war.
Right.
We've been sending
right.
them down because we can't, you know, because we won't send our own military, though we're starting to do
right.
that now.
It's sort of like the outsourced military.
Exactly. And, I mean, they're actually starting to South America. And so when you hear about defense spending and cutting defense, one of the things the right wing, especially in the corporate sector, has been really good at is scaring the shit out of people by saying, if we cut defense, we'll be more vulnerable. The truth is that, like every other program, it needs to be streamlined and the influences need to be removed so that objective analysis of what's needed and what we can afford can actually
happen.
Thank
you.
Okay, and you know what? That ends our segment. Sharon, are you still on? Are you still on with us?
Yes, I am.
I want to
but
thank you very much, Sharon.
May I ask one last question of Nicholas, please? Just one last question.
Yeah. Well, let me thank Sharon first. Sharon, I want to thank you. You're a new listener. I want to thank you for calling in. I hope this was exciting for you, and Nicholas was very impressive, as he is with me, and I'm sure other people. What do you think of Nicholas?
I
love him.
I got him. I only listened to him a little bit. I came in the middle of a conversation, so I can't really give an opinion, you know.
Well, I could just give you this, Sharon. Sharon, Obama cares, and so do I.
Okay, good.
Now, Sharon,
yeah.
Do you care? Are you Sharon? Do you care?
Yes, I do.
Are you going to vote Democrat?
No.
I almost had you.
I have different viewpoints than you do. So,
thank you so
much. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for calling. Sharon. I hope you call in again, Sharon.
Okay, great. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Have a good day.
One
thing I just want to throw out before the end of the segment here also, that it made the news, but not as big. Are you familiar with Jill Stein?
Not familiar, no.
All right, she's the Green Party candidate, and there's been a lot of uproar this season, and rightfully so. I mean, Gary Johnson's the same thing with the Libertarian Party, and these people are on ballots throughout the country. Jill Stein and her running mate were actually arrested yesterday at the debate, attempting to enter the debate without proper invitation.
Mm-hmm.
A nominated party, legitimate party candidate who's on the ballot attempted to enter the debate and was arrested for doing so.
Well, you know what? I can understand that. I don't want to go too long because I see our guest, Sean Carlos, here. Well, you got to really – let's look at it from the other end. I know what you're saying, Nicholas, and I agree with you, but then let's look at it realistically. He's not – it's a Republican-Democrat debate right now. Two people are in line and running for office. It's their debate, determine who's going to be the president of the United States. You can have Ron Paul trying to sneak in. You can have – you know, would that be fair? I understand what you're –
Yeah, well, I mean, the real point here is, like, I mean, yesterday, the other day after the show, I referenced a couple books that were worth reading, Chris Hedges' Death of a Liberal Class and then the Ray Raphael books.
Right.
Part of the reason I said that, though, is that because, and not a lot of people know this, but in the prior to Woodrow Wilson, there were a plethora of parties throughout the country. I mean, all varieties. A very strong anti-war movement that was more than hippies and cosheads. And what happened was, is because of the growing Wall Street community wanted us to go into World War One, strong anti-war movement happened. So Wilson brought on two guys, a guy by the name of Creel, who was basically the father of modern public relations as we know it, and then Bernays. This guy Bernays was actually Sigmund Freud's nephew, who used psychoanalysis to basically define and really create modern propaganda, and that was actually what was used to crush all opposition, leaving us with only these two parties. And this whole mechanism has been set up to the point where we're supposed to really buy into the fact that there's a huge difference between them. When, if you take their positions and compare them to the Greens and the Libertarians, and even the anarchists, as silly as
or
they
the Tea
be,
Party,
or the Tea. Well, I mean, the Tea Party's
they're still a party.
A variety of. It's a variety of things.
Sure.
But the thing is, though, is that, I mean, you know, the fact that a Green Party candidate is trying to get in there. We heard two guys who were basically playing tug-of-war with the same rope. And there really wasn't there's stark differences between them on topical issues. But the truth is that neither one of them would ever prosecute Wall Street crooks. Neither one of them would ever really actually take on the military-industrial complex. Neither one of them would take on the healthcare congressional complexes or all the pork spending, because it's a machine. And these are just cogs in the machine. And when people try to have stately debates with a variety of viewpoints, you end up getting things like presidential candidates being arrested for trying to enter debates. Because we want to say it's a Republican-Democrat debate? No. This was a debate between candidates for president of the United States. And I, for one, think it's a shame that we're limited to only hearing two voices, which, at the end of the day, don't really have all that. They have more in common than they actually have to divide.
I agree, and well said. Ladies and gentlemen, Nicholas, I could talk to Nicholas forever. We have our guest waiting here. Nicholas, you
rock. Thank you.
You do rock, my buddy. I want to thank you for your time coming up on the show. Thank you for you know, there's a debate that's coming up Monday again, and we'd like to have you on and explain things to us. I can't thank you enough. I love your views.
It's been my pleasure. Yeah,
well, thank you, sir.
I look forward to speaking to you again.
Really quickly, Nicholas, who's going to win? Who's going to win the election? Really quickly.
Obama's going to take it.
You think so?
If nothing else, Mitt Romney is such a lackluster candidate, and I mean, he basically takes his positions from a magic eight ball. So, there you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nicholas Groff, thank you, sir. We got to have you back. You're great. I love you, man. Thank you so much.
Nicholas.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Love the guy. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to switch gears right now. We have a special guest coming up. His name is Sean Carlos. Sean Carlos is here right now, but I'm going to explain a little bit who Sean Carlos is. And again, Nicholas, I want to thank you so much. Sharon, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. I hope you call in again. Sean Carlos is a film director. I think he's probably even a writer. He's an actor. He has written over 20 scripts. He likes horror, crime capers, and grindhouse films. Right now he's in the middle of a project called The Social Vigilante. And he will explain what that is. He's trying to get funding for it.
Also Evil Menace.
And Evil Menace, yes. And ladies and gentlemen, Diane tried to call her back, and her voice, that was Kelly. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to present Mr. Sean Carlo. Welcome to the show, sir. Sean, I want to thank you for patiently holding. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Doing good. Okay, Sean, we have enough time.
That's good.
And we're going to get right into the meat of everything, okay? So we're talking about right now, give me an idea about your film. Give me the premise of your film. The film that we're talking about right now that you're trying to raise money for is called Which one is called Social Vigilantes. That's the film we're trying to raise money for. Am I correct?
Right, Social Vigilantes. Yeah.
Tell me about it really quickly.
It's a grindhouse movie about four vigilantes: Manny, Lizzie, Black Guy, and Dakota Lee. They're fighting against hate mongers, killers, murderers. It's all led by this guy named Kane Curtis Kruger. He's the ultimate crime boss and villain of the project.
Okay. Who are the actors who are playing? Did you already cast for the film, Sean?
No, I have like a wish list of actors I want to use. So after we get financed, I'll contact their agents and try to get them attached to the movie once everything is finalized with the production.
Now, you do have a friend, and I was talking to Chip, somebody named, Hodder, can you tell me who Leatherface is why he went to kick my ass?
Yeah, that's Kane Hodder. He plays in Evil Menace. He's read the script for the zombie film and wants to star in that. He's the guy that played Jason in four of the Friday the 13th movies, part 7 through 10.
I love it.
He starred in a lot of other horror films across the years, and does stunt work, and he has a big fan base across the world, international fan base.
I'm his number one fan. I love when he played Jason. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I've been working out since he threatened my life. So if I see him, I've been working out, and that means I can run faster. I'm not going to be falling down with my movies hanging out. You're going to have to really catch me.
Right.
Now, let's go on to a little thing now. You know what I like to talk about. I like to talk about something that you're interested in. The movie sounds great. And I like to do a little thing with indie producers and directors. I like to call the segment dollars and common sense. Now, how much do we need? How much do we have? Okay, how about this? Where are we as far as funding this movie?
I'm at zero right now, just trying to seek out financing. We're seeking about $2.5 million. That's what I came up with the budget and everything. So that's the budget I'm trying to seek for right now.
Okay.
And you don't have any money funded so far?
Oh, no, not so far, no.
Okay.
Just trying to bring in a few investors.
How are we... You know how I put we, because you're on my show, and I'm invested in you because I like you very much.
All right, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Now, since we have no money, you got a great movie. Give me something juicy that you want everybody to know why they should invest in your movie right now, Mr. Sean Carlo.
Exactly.
Okay, I wanted to explain the characters a little more.
Sure.
Manny is a black guy. Manny's a black guy. He's a former crack baby, but he turned out be a very smart kid, and like graduated high school at like 15, 16 years old, and he met his girlfriend, a white female named Lizzie. She's a former neo-Nazi, but she changed her ways after she got with him. So they're kind of like a Bonnie and Clyde, you know, kind of like a natural born killers, you know, something like that for the interracial couple. And you have Black Guy, he's like a revolutionary, and that's his real name, Black Guy.
Okay.
And you have...
That's his real name? Somebody named him Black Guy?
And that's his real name. Like, throughout the story, I guess once the film is produced, you'll find out why. That's his family's name is Guy, and his family wanted to be, I guess, symbolic. His two parents call him Black Guy. So that's his family's name. So, and lastly, you have Dakota Lee, who's half Asian, half Indian, and half Mexican, and he's like a total badass martial artist.
Wait a minute.
Four.
That's three halves.
Yeah, three halves, yeah. That's great. Three halves, okay.
So he's like,
I'm sorry. I'm the geek of the show, so I have to point that out.
Yeah, I'm a geek. Hey, I'm a geek myself. But yeah, those four form the group. Social vigilantes, the anti-heroes, and they take on Kane, Curtis, Kruger, all three with K's, so the KKK, just take those initials, and that's his name. So, and he has like these hitmen throughout the story that's trying to take out the four vigilantes, and it's like a mixture of genres. You have horror, thriller, comedy, action, so it's a big wild ride, like one of those Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, like in-your-face guts, blood. It's compelling as well. It has a nice background with the drama and also the music I want to use in the movie. A lot of retro music I want to use.
Okay. Now, what is your wish list of the actors who would play in your movie?
Wish list, I have actor. Good question. His actor name, Jeff Fahey. He played in a few of the those guys' movie, Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez. Played in Machete. Wow, he has a long list.
Did I lose you, Sean?
Yes. Yeah, you lost him.
Oh, no. We're getting good.
Sean, call us back. Call us back.
Exactly. Sean, we're waiting for you. In the meantime, there was a person on Facebook I talked to, Luisa Leal. I'm sorry. She's listening to us, and she'll kick my ass. Luisa, I wanted you to call because you do have a casting notice. I know it's a copy and credit, but actors do need copy and credit to pad their resume. So
yep.
It doesn't mean – if you listen to the show, we're, a lot of these indie directors and everything, they get their films made. A lot of it is copy and credit, and that's just as important as getting paid to put something on your resume right now. So I know you're listening to me. I got about 15 minutes. If you want to call in, call on in. I'm asking you, Luisa, to get your casting notice out there to help some of our talent out there. I'm still waiting on Sean. Hopefully Sean will come in. This is where I think Sean is here. Hello?
You guys lose me?
Okay, we lost you. Sorry about that, Sean.
You guys lost me? Oh, man.
No, I'm sorry. Sometimes.
That's okay.
This system will drop people. They have a Skype system, too, that drops more people, but this is the – well, anyway, that's technical stuff. Sean,
back to the show.
let's get back to the show. Okay, dollars and common sense. Okay, your wish list was really, was a couple of people. Did you get in contact with these people, or these are people you just have in your mind when you wrote this script?
I have these guys in my mind, but I also contacted the agents. They just said when it's time to get financing, just contact us and we'll read the script and go from there.
Okay, you know what? That's good. That's a good thing. Now, let me just tell you something. I'm going to say two words, Tyler Perry. The reason I said it is when Tyler started as my DSA, and it was low budget, and he even starred in it. And I guess he had family or whatever. He had connections. This guy's worth probably $1 billion by now.
Very positive guy.
Yeah, and he needed a little help, and that's what our show is about. $2.5 million is not a lot of money asking. This is a feature, am I correct, Sean?
Oh, yes. Yes, it
okay.
is.
Okay, good. Not asking a lot of money for a feature. The premise, I like your premise because it's different. I like the Tarantino kind of look that you're talking about. I think it's going to be great. I like your characters. They do remind me of a Quentin Tarantino kind of off-the-wall characters, and tells me they can get into a lot of stuff.
A lot of badass stuff.
Now, what we got to do, and I use the word we, because it's on a show, when I hang up on you, it's you. So while you're with me, it's we. We have no money here. Now, there's two options we can do. There's two options we can go. One, we could try to shop the script and get an investor.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we can go on one of these sites like Indiegogo's, Kickstarter, you know, all that kind of stuff, and try to raise money. Have you done that yet, Sean?
I don't want to go that route again.
Okay. Then the other. So, what's the other route that you're thinking about going to get your film funded?
I don't really know. I'm trying to come on here to see if there's anybody listening.
Oh, the people who are listening to me. The people who are listening to me are broke. I'm borrowing money from them, and they tell me that they have that. No, I'm only kidding. What I want to do is this, Sean, because I do want to help. I don't want people to come on the show and say, you know, this and this and this. I'm shopping for this, and then I leave them. Goodbye. Well, thank you very much. You're shopping. Thanks. Yeah, fine. Yeah. See you with the rest of the million people out there. Have a good day. Thank you for my show.
Yeah, I'm
trying
to help.
Let me ask him a question, just to try to put my 2 cents in to try to help.
Sure. Then, hey, she put 2 cents in. Now, Sean, it's 2.1 million and 2 cents. You know, we got 2 cents in here. We're working.
Sean, do you have a good package? And I'm talking about your fiscal financial package. Do you have something that you could present in front of somebody right now?
Yes.
It's asked for.
Yeah, it's a business plan. Everything's in there with the budget, the cash I want to use, the return on investment, the amount they possibly could make back. And then we also have the tax incentives here in Louisiana. That's the best in the country. So a lot of moves.
Louisiana is a good tax incentive, and there's good tax incentives in a lot of places. And so you have a good sound business plan that you're ready, that's packaged with a nice bow on it that you can present to investors. The second question I would have for you is, do you have a pitch that's going to hit these investors over the head within a 3-4 minute time frame to even make them want to open the first page of that business plan?
Yeah, the exact same thing I brought to you guys about the whole cast, the whole diverse of the whole four, the vigilantes and the villains throughout the story. It's a total wild ride from beginning to end, like throughout the whole story. I think guys like Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez and fans of horror films, grindhouse films, over the top films would love the storyline.
Sean, good question, Suzanne. And Sean, have you been actively networking? Talk to me about your networking as far as getting your film out there. What have you done?
I have a movie trailer I shot last year, a very, very cheap movie trailer we shot last year, and met a few people over the years and a few crew members, a few special effects people that agreed to star in the movie or you know, do some kind of special effects, make up about the reading the script. So I have a lot of people so far that's interested in the project.
Okay, good. Then you're on YouTube.
Good.
You're on YouTube, so your film is out there. Your name is out there. Now, how's the audience on your YouTube channel? I mean, are you getting a lot of audience who are interested in looking at your trailer and possibly networking?
Yes, I have a few people on there. You have a few fans I grew up with,
How about a distribution plan? Do you have that in set? Have you got that in place?
Yes, I have that.
Because investors like to hear about that.
Yeah, I don't have an actual company set, you know, but I do have like a few companies I want to send a movie off to once it's shot in the can and everything. I have a few companies overseas I want to send it to and in America as well.
Now, are you thinking, now, before, I know what you're thinking. As soon as you shoot it, every indie people think that, okay, I shot the film, it cost me all this money. First thing I'm going to do is enter it in a film festival so I could get some distribution notice. Am I correct? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I'm going to do both, actually. I'm going to send it to a film festival, then at the same time send it to a few video, you know, distribution companies across the world to see who can actually buy it.
Yeah, it's got to be marketed, and it's got to be available for distribution, or it's not going to go anywhere.
Right. Sean, I want to do an experiment with you. I always think out of the box.
All right.
I always think, and this is how I'm wired.
Awesome.
You're the first one I want to do this with. I think it might be a good experiment. If it works, it's going to be a pioneer for a lot of indie filmmakers.
All right.
Do you have a webcam or a video camera that can tape you, just you, talking about your project?
Actually, I don't have a webcam. I have Skype, but I haven't paid for it yet. So.
Oh, no, not Skype. I think Chip is my buddy. I'm going to talk to Chip. I think he can probably get some arrangements. Here's what I like for to do, Sean. If you can videotape yourself giving a pitch of this film, what it means to you, how much you need, talk about your business plan, talk about the people who are interested in working with you once you get it funded. If you can give me that, if you can give
with
me the passion.
With
passion, what I like to do with that videotape is I like to have you come back on as soon as you're done, and I want to show that videotape to a person that I know who is an expert on, and Suzanne is an expert too. Suzanne, don't get upset. She's an expert, but
I can't
put so much on her. She has her cup is so filled up. I mean, it's running all over the table. She has to call a plumber.
You can call me anything you want to call me. Just don't stop
calling.
No.
What I'm trying to say is this person has written 4 books on putting a package together, going to investors. And Suzanne is just as knowledgeable. I just want to say that. But Suzanne will not have the time to kind of bring you along.
I don't.
Because she has so many other things she has to do for her clients.
Right.
So what I want to do is if you can give me that videotape, just like that, your package, what the film is, who you're about, give me a little bio on you, why you think this film should be made, you have your sound business package, who you're targeting this film to, your audience, your demographic audience, just you talking, I want to invite you back on, and I'm going to have that person listen to you. Just
perfect
listen to the
idea.
Tape. And she
right.
will tell me if your package is good enough to talk to an investor with. Because I'm going to tell you something, Sean, and I had a talk with her last night. I said 67%. She says 95% of the people who pitch will die in a pitch within 5 seconds. Nowadays,
I think she's giving good odds. I would give it less.
Yeah, I agree with you, Suzanne. Nowadays, a lot of, and I'm not saying you, Sean, I'm not saying you, but a lot of days with technology, iPhones and everything, people are going out and making shorts, putting it on YouTube, and all of a sudden they're a director, and I shot a film. They're not even going to film school anymore. Film school seems to be obsolete. I went to film school, and I guarantee you that's something people just kick back like food class. Nowadays,
right.
people get a camera, and they got a camera, and they have a couple of friends skateboard off a roof, and they tape it on YouTube, and they get a million hits, and they're a director.
Yep.
Right.
But when it comes to actually pitching an investor, and believe me, these guys are bastards. They're ruthless bastards.
That's why you have to hit them within 3 minutes, or they're not going to listen to a word you say.
So
that's why you have to show your passion.
That's true. That is very true, Suzanne. So if you can give me that video, I'm going to have her listen to it. I'm going to have her come on, and I'm going to bring you on, too. I'm going to have her listen to it, and I'm going to say to her, does Sean Carlo has his package together? Can we get him in front of an investor? Because I'll get you in front of an investor. I'll try everything I could, Sean, to get you in front of the investor. But
that's
you got
perfect,
one shot.
Brian.
But you got one shot with him, Sean, and I will work my ass off to get you in face to face on air in front of an investor and you pitch him. And I'm telling you, it's brutal. It's a bloodbath.
Yeah,
I think
is.
You're that good.
Yeah,
I think
you
good.
Can do it. I think you can do it.
I have it on air. I need the ratings. I mean, if you die, you die. But anyway.
It's fine. I just want to get
I'm
the film
I'm on your
produced.
Team. You can do it, Sean.
I do have passion for it. I just wanted to get it produced. And once you see it on screen, we'll tell it all.
Here's what I can do, Sean. I can get you. I can 98% of the chance, I can get you face-to-face or ear-to-ear, mouth-to-mouth, whatever, live on air with a person who is interested in investing in independent films. This is what you want.
That's exactly what you want, Sean.
But I will not be there to back you up. Suzanne will not be there. It's you against him. But before you get to him, Sean, I got to know you're ready because you don't want to get to him or her. And I'm saying her, too. I'm sorry, people. I'm not sexist. You don't want to get to him or her with one shot and you're not ready because you will lose a possible investor. So that's why I want you to do that for me with the videotape. And we're going to have her listen to it and see if you are ready. And if you're freaking ready, I'm ready for you. And let's have you on the air and that investor on the air. And you pitch the son of a bitch. And you could probably make, well, I'm not calling him a son of a bitch. Let's call him nice. We'll call him a son of a bitch after I hang up. But you pitch him. And you could be an instant millionaire with that pitch. What do you say?
Right.
That's the deal I have to offer.
And listen to our advice in the pitch.
Right.
Hit
him
over the head in 3 minutes.
What do you
and
say, Sean?
Passion. Take it on, please,
okay.
Sean.
No, that's an option. I wouldn't mind taking. That's fine.
Well, think about it, Sean, because this is what you want. You
this
have a film.
Camera.
I know. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. Sean, you are a typical director, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I did some stuff, too. It's like you and I, we go in there, we make our film, we have it in our head. Well, the film is this. It's our baby. It's our baby. How can we put our baby in a fire? Well, we have to. We have to put our baby in a fire and make sure it doesn't burn like a marshmallow. Maybe sometimes the baby burns. Sometimes the baby comes out uncharred, a little tan, but he flies.
Right.
For you, here's your options. Your options are you want to raise money. I'm thinking you don't want to go Indiegogo. You don't want to go Kickstarter. You don't want to put it on a campaign because you know how it is. I know how a campaign is, and I tell the joke, and I'm not going to tell it anymore. A lot of campaigns fail. It does.
Right.
But
the hardest part is getting the key to the door that gets it open to somebody to listen to you.
Right.
And
so
a business plan sitting in front of you isn't going to do it.
And
you've got to open that door.
That's true. And your next plan is saying, okay, well, I don't want to go on that campaign. Now I want, okay, I got to get my movie funded. The only way I know as an investor, unless you know another way to do it, I mean, I think you can go to the bank and try to mortgage your house and put a third or a second on it or max out your credit cards. I don't know.
I don't have either one of those.
Right. Then my only option that I can think of, unless you can tell me, is to get you in front of an investor.
Well, I have a few.
Oh, you do? Tell me, you have a few ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I can pitch it to someone, but I was just hoping maybe someone was listening in or have people contact me through phone or email to
Sounds
send
them
good. My plan, show what I have to offer in that plan with the people I have attached so far and my, DPs, my, crew members, my special effects, to show them that I do have passion for it.
Right. Okay, Sean, we got 90 seconds. That's my offer, and I hope you come back and take me think about it. But right now, tell everybody how they get a hold of you. Tell people who are interested in your film. Give it to me, Sean. Let them know about it, how they get in contact with you.
You can contact me at Sean Carlo on Facebook. My company is Child Prodigy Films. That's on Facebook. My movie trailer for Social Vigilantes is on YouTube. Just type in Soldier Vigilante's movie trailer. I'm on IMDb, Sean Carlo. That's S-E-A-N-C-A-R-L-O. That's about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Carlo. He has a great film. Please take an interest in it. Please go to his Facebook, talk to him, invest in his film. I really believe in it. I think it'll be a great hit. The guy's a great guy. Sean, I love you to death. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. I appreciate it very much. Thanks.
I wish to thank my special guest today, Nicholas Goroff. Thank you very much, my friend.
Yes,
thank you, Sean Carlo, for coming on the show. You're a great director. You're going to make it. Thank you, Suzanne, for giving us your expertise. Always a pleasure having you on. Thank you, Diane,
thank you.
For being one of our specials on the show. I love you guys. Okay, we're in archives right now, I'm sure. So I'm going to end the show with the song. It's my song that always gives me hope, and I think about filmmakers when I hear this song. If you're listening in the archives, it's like it's still live to you. But remember something, you guys, seriously. Filmmakers are, they're a different kind of people.
They're artists.
They are artists, and artists are strange people. They see things that are not there. They make stories, and they can put characters that can make you laugh, make you cry, take you to another world. They're a rare breed. They're great storytellers, what filmmakers are. And because of what Nicholas was alluding to before, money situations, a lot of you will not get to see fantastic work. Sean has an idea, and I like his idea. I would watch his film on a Saturday eating popcorn. I would. Even if I had a hot girl next to me, I wouldn't even touch her breast until the film was over.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's how I would. That's... Okay,
right.
I'll touch your plus during the film. Okay, fine. But I will watch the film. But I am trying to bring this to you, and I'm trying to bring you talent like Sean. And Sean's not going to come on a show and say, hi, I want to be on Brian the Hammer. Sean doesn't give a shit about Brian the Hammer. Sean cares about his film, which he should.
Yep.
And I'm a tool that I'm hoping I'm reaching some of you guys to say, you know what, Brian's no joke. He has some, and I bring people on like Sean, and I bring people on like Bill Obrist, and I bring good people on like Nicholas Goroff to tell you we're not a joke. We're not
real
a joke.
Deal.
We will put independent filmmakers face to face, ear to ear. We got Suzanne for that. That's why she's here. She's here voluntarily because she's a fan of the arts, and she is an advocate for filmmakers.
Yes, I am.
She's not here just to look pretty and nice tatas. She does have nice tatas, but she's not here for her tatas. She's here to help you. And that's why we have Diane with the board. Diane's here to say, you know what, we want no foolishness going on in this show. We have a point we want to make, and the point is we got indie filmmakers and we got political things. We're a serious show. We have no time for Baba Booey.
No, we don't.
You guys would know that if you're a Howard Stern fan. Listen to my show. You don't like me? Fine. But listen to the talent that comes on this show. Help the talent out. And if you're an indie filmmaker, I mean an investment company, you own a company, get your ass in here. I will promote your company if you need me to promote your company. I'll give you free commercials as long as you listen to the talent.
Yeah,
if
don't
you,
care about
if
us.
You're an investor and
message.
You own a company called Mattel, I'll give you fucking free spots if you fucking listen to the talent. They need a chance.
Yep.
They just need a freaking chance, and I'm hoping that I'm doing okay. And having you guys listen to me, that's why I'm busting my ass.
And also, if you're the talent, listen to the message. You'll learn.
That's it. That's true. And that's a hard part. I want to thank my guests again. Again, if you're in archives, it's like it's live to you. Nicholas Goroff came in here and spoke for an hour and a half regarding the presidential debate. He talked to a new caller named Sharon. I love it. If I got a new caller, Sharon, God bless you. You're a new caller. I hope you come back. Somebody's
thank
listening.
You.
Kelly, that means Kelly's posting. And Kelly, thank you so much for getting the word out there. But I'm not doing this to talk. I'm not doing this because, hey, Brian, you want to get laid? Okay, well, you know, that's a perk. But I'm not doing it to get laid. I can ask me. I really generally want to do this to help talent. I really do. And I hope I'm not doing this in vain. I hope all my hard work is just me just mouthing out and a couple of people going, yeah, Brian, you're great. It's not about that. If that's what it is, I'll go off the frickin' air. But if I go off the frickin' air, you guys, you're going to go back to your normal shit. And how's that working for you?
How's that working for you? Exactly.
I am your new hope. I am your tool. I am your hammer.
Yep.
And I'll keep going as long as you guys support me. I'll do it.
Yep.
I'll do it. But when you stop supporting me, I'm not there no more. Suzanne, love you to death. Thank you so much.
I love you too. I love the show, and I'm glad to help.
Thank you.
They want to call in and get free advice from me. That's what I'm here for.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart. And that's the kind of people we have working side by side with us. Diane, I want to thank you so much for being on the board and everything. Oh. How you doing?
I'm good.
Thank you, Lady Di.
I hope they get the message, you guys. I'm busting my ass so hard every
day. You are.
And I won't give up. Because
I won't give up.
I'm going to end the show, but you guys can hang up. I listened to this song because I do think it's the indie filmmakers. I do think it's a fourth quarter. I do think you got one shot. I do think you need a clear eyes, full heart. You won't lose. I'm sorry?
I said, now I have a tear.
Oh, okay. It's true.
It's heartfelt.
It is true.
It's true. And this is why I get really emotional when I end the show. I go on there and I see somebody saying, hey, watch my trailer. And then I hear somebody go, can somebody please like me?
I know.
I said, all you have to do is push a button. I'll have you on. I'll like you.
Yeah.
Coming on my show means you get your name out. Forget the subject. Sean Carlo got his name out there.
Yep. People were listening.
He did something today. What did you guys do today? I'm not talking about you guys. I'm just talking to the Facebook people. Did you post a pretty kitty?
Yeah.
Did you post a picture of something on YouTube that has anything to do with you, that's going to promote you?
Did you tell everybody you're going to be eating a tuna sandwich for lunch? Do we really care?
Exactly.
That sounds good.
It does sound good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I am hungry.
All right, guys.
I am hungry.
What I'm going to do is play this song, and I'm going to say, you guys can hang up any time. After the song ends, I'm going to end the segment, and then I'm going to go to my closet.
Me too.
Where there's peace and quiet. Love you guys. You guys, in fourth quarter.
Okay.
One shot. Clear eyes. Strong heart. Can't lose.
Thank you so much for dropping me a line.
What a buildup. How did that message get in there? That reminds me, I got a letter to read tomorrow. And what a letter. Remember I said I was going to read the hate mail tomorrow?
I love hate mail.
Oh, this one's going to really get to you.
You want me to hit the right?
What's that, Diane?
Do you want me to hit the right?
Oh,
button.
It's a hell of a, it starts off as Brian, you bastard, and then it gets better from there.
Oh, I got to hear it. It's just, I can't wait. I love hate mail.
You'll hear it. And then I'm going to make my first prank phone call next Friday with the great comedian Chad. And everybody, clear eyes, full heart. See you tomorrow.
Okay, babe.
It's real simple. You got two more quarters and that's it. Now, most of you have been playing this game for 10 years. You got two more quarters, and after that, most of you will never play this game again as long as you live. I want you to take a moment, and I want you to look each other in the eyes. I want you to put each other in your hearts forever, because forever is about to happen here in just a few minutes.
I got my fans in the stands, my team on my back, my family in my heart. I put my city on the map. See, I'm cool with my school, but I know I can do better. I checked the mail yesterday, and not one college letter, not one college offer. After all this hard work, I'd be telling you a lie if I said it didn't hurt. So how do I stay focused in this game called life? And do I have a fair chance when this world's so shite? See, we all pay a price. I got some things on my mind, but I need to regain my focus, cause it's game time. Give all, leave nothing. In the end, I gotta choose. Clear eyes, full heart, I can't lose. Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Clear eyes. Now look me in the eyes and put your hand in mine. Whatever's about to happen right here in this moment of time. So let's draw a line right here in the sand. And let it be said that on this very day is the day that we took a stand. Cause not just a game, it's more than a game. It's more than the hurt, it's more than the pain. It's more than the glory, it's more than the fame. This right here is about legacy, man. So it's bigger than me, it's bigger than us. We can lose sight in the midst of the fuss. Let's slow it down and take it in. Enjoy this moment with the rust. They went bad, but we wanted more. This is what we've been waiting for. With tears in our eyes, we let our hearts roar. Unleash war when we walk out this door. We won't be delayed, we won't be denied. In the end, we won't be refused with clear eyes or full heart. There's no way that we can lose.
Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Clear eyes.
Brian Hammer Jackson. See you tomorrow.